Hi, this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. We have a very special guest on the line, the great Steph Noe of the Athletic. How you doing, brother?
I am doing excellent, man. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, you're one of my favorite guests on the show. I can't thank you enough for jumping on. And I'd love to get your critique, your Siskel and Ebert critique of my what I thought was a breathtaking or world-changing performance on the Bulls Outsiders. What did you? So I understand. First of all, did you watch the entire episode yet?
I caught the first 20 minutes. It was a 9:30 game that you covered for that Jazz game, so it was pretty late when you guys were on there. But from the, I heard I missed like some big finale. But from the 20 minutes that I saw, I mean, I think Kendall Gill better watch out. You're right behind his back there.
Thank you. Oh, believe me. After seeing Kendall in person, there's no way I'm gonna beat that guy in the TV too. Plus, I think he's like 10 years older than me, but he looks like he's about 20 years younger. It's amazing to see how him and Horace Grant in person, and even Mark Shinovsky and Will Perdue, how good they look in person. You know, I don't think TV does them justice. It obviously didn't do me justice. I can guarantee I'm much better looking in person after watching the replay. But thanks for watching, man. So, yeah, I had a blast over there. That was a lot of fun, and I can't say enough good things about the people over there and the professionals. It's just amazing. Like, I call it Bulls Disneyland. Be able to sit there and ask question after question. I asked them up front, hey, can I ask you questions? And it was just a great experience. So thanks for watching. You got to check it out on Facebook, though, because that's where I had my big address, the Bulls Nation. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it.
So, I will definitely check it out after we're done recording here. So do you all watch the games together as they're going on?
Yeah. So I got there a little earlier than the other guys, but it was myself, Big Dave, John, in three basically like lazy boy type chairs, and then also Horace and Kendall. We're all in the same room. Will stopped by for a little bit, but I think he watched it in a different room. He probably got upset at me with the first question I asked him. Who's better, Pop or Phil Jackson? And as a coach... He maybe didn't want to deal with my incessant questions. For the record, he answered Pop by a mile, which kind of shocked me. And then you know, we all obviously had the, you know, Bulldog stop by. A lot of people came in and out, but it was awesome. We all watched the game together, and for Jabari to have a breakout night like that made it extra special. Extra special. So I guess that's what would qualify as a breakout night for Jabari this year. How disappointing the year has been, but it was awesome, man. It was just a great experience. But hey, let's get to the lecture at hand. Let's start out with this question. So let's do a hypothetical. I buy the team, and I immediately I take over, and the first thing I do is hire you and Darnell Mayberry, maybe Casey Johnson as consultants, and you come into the office. And we all just sit down and we begin the conversation. I want the top three problems with this team. So I'll go to you first. What say you? What's your biggest issue with this Bulls team this season?
The biggest issue just with the franchise in general, and this goes from the roster to the management to the coaching, I mean, just everything about it, is that they have not embraced analytics. And you can see that the teams that have done that in the NBA, those are the teams that have had a ton of success. ESPN published this great analytics ranking, I think it was about 4 years ago, and it was through all four major sports. The Bulls were one of the lowest rated on there. The Nets were also one of the lowest rated on there, and they completely changed their general manager and their coach. And you can see that they've put in Kenny Atkinson, they've gotten Sean Marks. Both those guys are extremely pro-analytics, and their rebuild is doing amazing, whereas, you know, the Bulls, I mean, they're just kind of stagnating here. So what I would tell you as owner is you got to make an analytics hire for the next coach and for the next GM, because it just makes such a huge difference. You have to be a forward-thinking team these days because the league is changing so quickly. So I think that is by far the number one priority for the Bulls.
So how was that poll judged? Because I would counter, I thought Hoiberg was an analytics guy. I could be wrong on that. But I thought he was, you know, more forward thinking or you know, with trying to up the pace and more threes than other coaches. Am I wrong in that assertion?
This was before Hoiberg was coached. This was under Tibbs, and they said that he did get some feedback from Steve Weinman, who's there. Steve Weinman does a great job. They have another guy, Miles Abbott, who's also great. But I don't think Boylan is like a very pro analytics guy either. And the main reason for that low ranking was because of Gar and Pax. I mean, both those guys are really old school basketball minds. They're not really big fans of the numbers. You can tell by their comments in the media and the stuff they reference when they say what they're looking for in players in the draft and free agency. So it's fine if they don't appreciate that stuff, but they have really good staff in place, so they have to listen to those guys. And some of the best signings that the Bulls have made over the past couple of years, the guys on the fringes, those are guys that the analytics team has pointed out to them and guys that they should have avoided, like Dwayne Wade and Jabari Parker. I mean, those their numbers are just terrible. And if they had just listened to these people that are really brilliant on their staff, they could avoid so much pain.
So I would counter also one more time, because I would say I was at the Indiana game, and I noticed in that game a few things. And number one was where they were putting Blakeney in the offense, and Blakeney was firmly positioned on the baseline for a baseline three-point shot, basically, where they just kind of spread the floor and put him out there. I don't think that move would have happened without some view of advanced analytics. Like, I think there is some type of going on there. I don't know who's having the discussions with Boylan. My bigger concern is that the front office is a little bit too hands-off with Boylan and just letting him do what he wants, because the last 3 weeks make absolutely no sense to me, with the offense, you know, basically resulting in many, many Lopez hook shots at the end of the clock. I mean, there's just so many disasters. And then you hear that Doug Collins and Pax met with Jim, and then suddenly against Indiana, the offense looks, you know, somewhat remotely resembling what a modern day offense would.
Yeah, I think that was definitely an impetus for Boylan speeding things up in that Pacers game. And ever since then, too, they've had these stretches where they play fast and they look so much better, but they just can't sustain it for a full 48 minutes. And Boylan will call timeout, set up a post play that just results in like 10 seconds of a guy backing down and, you know, taking these terrible hook shots. So I do agree with you that somebody needs to tell Boylan that he's got to cut this stuff out. I mean, it's just so crazy when you watch the Bulls play offense, that they're not giving themselves a chance at all to develop guys or to win these games. No other team plays in this way. Like, even the Grizzlies or other teams like the Spurs, who play really slowly, I mean, they're still passing the ball around. They have high IQ players. They're setting up good open shots, and the Bulls just aren't doing that. So if that means Pax coming down and, you know, telling Boylan what kind of shots to institute, then, you know, so be it. That something needs to happen here for the Bulls.
I agree. Even in the Lakers game yesterday, I just thought there were far too many times where even their better players were just holding on to the ball. You look at Lowry, there was a few possessions where I'd like to get more shots, but, you know, he's holding on the ball for 3 or 4 seconds looking for a pass and waiting for something to happen. There's just the ball movement seems at times to just really slow down, and it drives me nuts. I wanted to get into, before we get into that, your other reasons, the other problems with this team, I did want to get into Parker's situation, because I know you've been one of his biggest critics, but I even think his biggest critics would admit what's going on the last 3 weeks is absolutely ridiculous. Because I assumed it was a trade that was in the works. That's why he was being benched with his injury history. You don't want to risk it. But this team can't score. And the one thing he can do is score, and score quickly, as he proved in the last two games. How do you explain what happened with him just being sent to the bench and exiled with me on Jabari Island and not seeing any playing time for 3 weeks, when there's clearly guys who are just as bad, if not worse, like Blakeney, I'd even say Levine, defensively on this team, and he just doesn't see the court? It's insanity to me. What say you?
I totally agree with you. I mean, as you said, I have not been a big Jabari Parker fan, but he can definitely help the team. Like, if you're playing guys like Shaq Harrison at small forward or Chandler Hutchison at power forward over him, that just doesn't make any sense. And the Bulls bench has been so bad recently. Parker, when he's been given finally this chance to play, he's looked pretty good. And he was looking great, actually, right as they benched him. I mean, he had basically like kept up improvements throughout the season, and then right as he's hitting his peak, he gets these DNPs. And his quotes to Sam Smith after this most recent Lakers game, he told Sam that, you know, he has no idea why he was sitting. That was his exact quote. And Boylan has said that it's for conditioning or for defense. And as you pointed out, I mean, he's not even – his defense is terrible, sure, but there are so many other guys on this team who also have really poor defense who are not being punished in the same way as Parker. You mentioned Blakeney and Levine. I think Levine's defense has regressed this year.
I agree.
And, you know, he's still playing 40 minutes or whatever. He's still given the ultimate green light. And that's not – that's not to say anything negative on Levine. I mean, I think he's really helped the team, and he's doing everything that he can. But it's just you can't say that Parker can't play because he's not playing defense, and then, you know, not hold the rest of the team to that same standard. It's just not fair.
I agree 100%. And I think it's kind of the least discussed story of the season has been, you know, Levine absolutely has improved offensively. And I love what he's doing on that end. But defensively, I think especially in the last few weeks, I think he's been terrible, absolutely terrible on that end. And he, I don't know how many games he's always given up backdoor cuts, which should never happen with a professional. Happens at least once or twice a game with him. It's just really frustrating to me to see him regress to this level. Because at the start of the season, I thought he was looking okay on that end. I mean, not great, or he'll never be average. I don't understand why, but I agree with you. I think he's been really poor, and I haven't seen the latest RPM metrics, and that's the one thing I do kind of pay attention to is RPM defensively. Like, those RPM defensive numbers, I think, do have some value. But I bet he's going to be very, you know, low when it comes up, when that next number comes out. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the problem with Levine is just that he's so tired. He's exhausted in these games. He's playing huge minutes. He's carrying such a high load on offense. And he said he's still affected by the sprained ankle that he had a couple weeks ago. So I just think that he is saving his energy for the offensive end. You mentioned the back cutting. He's reaching a lot on defense, just like going for these kind of Rondo poke steals where he lets the guy go by. And he's also jumping passing lanes. And when he does stuff like that, when he goes for these gambles, he just takes himself out of the play, gives the other team an advantage, and then he doesn't fight to get back in these plays. So that's something where, you know, Jabari would do that. People like me would point that out on Twitter. And then Boylan banished him to the bench. So, you know, I don't really understand why Levine is not receiving criticism for these same things.
Agree. There's a play, too, that he does this constantly in games. It drives me nuts. And I don't know if you've caught on this, too, where there'll be a three-point attempt from the opposition. It happened in the first half yesterday. And the Bulls will have three or four guys in the paint. And it'll usually come from his side. And he cuts so, and he attacks the basket so far for the rebound that there's a long rebound, and he's gone too far underneath to have any chance at it. I don't know if you've noticed that. He does that consistently. He did it again yesterday where the Bulls lost a long rebound because Levine, for some reason, instead of boxing his man out, has just went right to the basket without you know, contemplating the fact that we could have a long rebound. He didn't need to. We had three guys underneath. Anyhow, that's something that the coaches need to address with them, and obviously it's not happening.
I mean, I don't want to rag on him too much because, as I said, he's been doing so much for this team. I mean, he's so far from the Bulls' biggest problem.
Agreed.
So I don't think he has great feel just generally for the game, and that's kind of what you reflected on these rebounds. But, I mean, if Levine is this team's biggest problem, then they've done a bunch of things right to get to that point. So that's kind of a good problem to have, I think.
Agreed. I want to get your take on Dunn. So, I mean, he's a kid I really like. I think defensively he's elite. I think he's got incredible potential. I thought the Portland game was some of the best defense. The officiating was awful in that game specifically. But when he was on Lillard, he had some moments there. It's about as good as it gets for a perimeter defender. But then again, he has a game like last night where he was, to me, last night was probably one of the worst games I've ever seen him have in a Bulls uniform. He's so maddening, so frustrating. He had five turnovers, poor shooting. What's your take on Dunn? And then you see against like Indiana where he plays so well. Do you think there's hope here? Or do you think, hey, it's time to cut bait at the end of the season?
If you're a player in the NBA, you're going to have games if you're given enough opportunity where you look really good. I mean, even Cameron Payne had a game earlier this season where he hit 7 3-pointers. So yeah. The problem with Dunn is he's obviously been extremely inconsistent, along with being like fairly injury prone. So he's not somebody that I would pin all my future hopes on. I mean, there's a lot of really good free agents at point guard this summer. There's a couple interesting prospects in the trade market too that the Bulls could go out and get. So, you know, while I don't think they should just totally give up on Dunn, I think they should keep an eye and find somebody that can have a consistent performance. If Dunn is going to have these games where, as you said, this Lakers game, he just looked terrible, and other games, you know, he has put the Bulls on his back and carried them to wins, but you can, that's not like a special ability. I don't feel the special ability is to be able to do that consistently, and he hasn't shown that he can do that yet.
Yeah, agreed. Bobby Portis is another guy that drives me nuts. You know, I've maintained Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker are a lot closer as players than people realize. I think they're both power forwards, offensively inclined, with major defensive deficiencies, both good rebounders. I don't think he's as athletic as Jabari. And then he has a game like yesterday where he's 1 for 11, just gunning up shot after shot in limited minutes. I find him immensely frustrating. I don't think you can devote $15 million a year to a guy to be a backup on a team already with a 4-5 set in Lowry and Wendell Carter Jr. You know, what say you? What do you think they should do with Bobby Portis?
I think Portis is a pretty nice player. I mean, he's one of the few guys on the team that will take open threes, which is so important. And yeah, he had a bad game against the Lakers. But I agree with you that it just doesn't really fit with the timeline of the team, especially when you're talking about big men. They're not that valuable. And look at last summer where Montrezl Harrell and Julius Randle, they're both probably better players than Portis, got like pretty reasonable deals. There's guys like that every year at power forward. So I don't think the Bulls should tie up a huge portion of their cap. They have to upgrade wings. That's really where you spend a lot of money, and that's where you attack free agency. So while I like Portis, I do agree with you that this is actually like a really good time for them to try to shop him, because he does have some value if a team wants to get his restricted rights. So that's what the Bulls should. They should try to package him with Lopez or Parker, and I think that's a really good way to like kill two birds with one stone.
What do you think value is? Let's assume they don't trade him. This summer's a big year. He's going to be a restricted free agent. What is value? What would you pay for him to lock him up long term?
Casey had a report on what the Bulls offered, and I can't remember what it was off the top of my head. I think it was like 4 years, 48 or something, maybe somewhere around that range.
And he turned that down.
Sorry, what was that, Fred?
And he turned that down. Well, obviously, he turned it down. Insane to me, you know.
Yeah, he did turn it down, and you would have to assume that he's going to get less than that, given that he's had not a great year, mostly based on injury. So I still think that he's young enough where, you know, some rebuilding team might want to throw a decent-sized offer at him, like a $10 million-plus year offer. But, yeah, if I was the Bulls, I would just, you know, if you can bring him back for cheap, fine. They already have so much money committed to, and also, like, so many minutes committed to these big positions. So if they have to be prepared for the possibility that they're just going to have to let him walk for nothing. And, you know, the Bulls have been really reticent to do that in the past, but it just doesn't make any sense to overpay for him.
No way. Agreed. How he could turn down 4 years at 48 is insane to me. With you touched on it. People aren't paying for big men anymore. You know, I'd be shocked if Draymond Green gets more than $18 million a year. But, you know, I could be wrong on that. Maybe there's a team out there with cap space. There's only 11 teams really with significant max cap space. So I don't think it's going to be – maybe the Golden State be willing to pay him more. I don't think I would pay more than $10 million a year for Bobby Portis right now, and I think that's on the high end. I think $8 million a year is a fair offer to him for what he brings, with no defense basically and, you know, some good offensive skills. But, you know, call me crazy. I think he'll look back and realize that was a major mistake to turn that one down. What are the other big issues with this team? We kind of touched on Boylan, the way he's playing offensively. What are some of the other issues that you see as a part of my leadership / consulting group?
Well, I think that Dunn has shown some improvement. I mean, and we were talking about how he's been struggling too, but he's probably the guy that has shown the most improvement, ironically, under Boylan. So That's the biggest problem to me. I mean, if you're going to lose, if you're going to tank the season, fine, whatever. I mean, they were doing that with Hoiberg last year and for the beginning of this year too, but you have to develop the players. You can't, if you read Darnell Mayberry's story at The Athletic this morning, his nuggets, which are always great,
yep,
he's talking to the players on the team and they seem totally miserable. That's just not a good environment for these guys to grow in. It's not anywhere that free agent obviously wants to come to. And Fred was getting these guys better. Every single player on the roster improved under Fred last year. So for Boylan to either have them stagnate or get significantly worse, I just think that's totally unacceptable. This is the year where these players are 20, 21 years old. This is where they have to make huge leaps in their game. So, I mean, I understand that the front office doesn't want to have to pay for three coaches, but at the same time, you're only eating, like, what is he making next year? $1.6 million?
Exactly, yeah.
They have to make that move because Boylan is just not doing anything for these guys.
Especially if Hoiberg gets hired, you know, by some team, then you won't have to worry about that salary again, or you only have to pay the delta, whatever he's paid next year. And it sounds like he will somewhere. In retrospect, it sounds like you think it was a major mistake to fire Fred Hoiberg.
I do, and I said it at the time. I mean, I actually liked Boylan back when he was an assistant coach. I didn't know him extremely well, but I talked to him, you know, once or twice. I listened to his appearance on the Dunked On podcast, and he seemed like a really smart guy. And then all of a sudden when he gets in the head coaching chair, it seems like his perspective has totally changed, where he's this old school, like, military-style coach that just thinks the problem is going to be solved by running wind sprints and doing push-ups. And it just, I mean, that's obviously not the answer to why this team is playing so poorly.
Yeah, he's, you know, Mr. Toxic Masculinity all of a sudden, where he's just, you know, fixed everything. You know, he's trying to be Tibbs, and that's a big mistake in this era. And I agree, this is a disaster right now. You know, I hope he's smart enough, and I agree too. I heard other good things about him, that he's not an idiot, and I'm hoping he'll learn and adjust it. And I think he has kind of put a little bit, from what I've heard, a little bit off the gas pedal, where, I mean, it seems like they're getting too much time off, right? I know they were off two full days around Christmas, and it seems like they're getting more time off, but I don't know. This is such a mess right now. My biggest frustration is I want to see the starters at least start to mesh and look good. I saw that against Indiana. That was the best game. I was in the UC for that one. I've seen in quite a while from the Bulls. And then since then, it's just kind of regressed. I thought a pretty good even effort against Portland, a pretty good even effort against Utah. But last night was a disaster against a pretty poor team. I want to throw this out, though, and you might have saw this on Bulls Outsiders. I said within 2 years, this team can be a contender. Now, there's a lot dependent on that. Let's assume they get Zion Williamson. Let's assume they win that. Right now, they're one of the – they have very good odds to get him, and you draft him. How do you see him fitting in with this team, and do you think that could make this team a contender within 2 years?
Well, I heard Ricky O'Donnell on Cash Considerations, another great Bulls podcast, and he was talking about this and how if they have Boylan as the coach when Zion gets drafted, I mean, it's just going to be a total disaster. This Zion, he thrives, ball in his hands, like playing a really up-tempo system, and Boylan's just going to have him like walking it up and throw it in the post to him a bunch of times. So I think that, you know, this team has some really good young talent. There are some things to be excited about. There were Bulls fans like yourself that, you know, had some real optimism when Fred Hoiberg was the coach. So I don't think it's quite as dire as we're feeling right now. It's just, I mean, I hate to just keep on harping on Boylan, but he's just dragging this team down so much, where you can't really be excited about anything. The games are so painful to watch. They're so boring. It's such a slog. So I think that if they just get like a normal coach, they hit on the draft, if they can get a guy like Zion, they have this free agency, a ton of cap space, like things are going to start to look a lot better for the Bulls.
I agree 100%. They have so much talent, you know, that I think is just not gelling or meshing for whatever reason. Out of those big four, though, out of the Wendell Carter Jr., Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, and Chris Dunn, oh, let's even take Chris Dunn off the table. Which one of those three would you think, number one, would return the most in a trade, and which one would you most likely want to trade next?
So you said LaVine, Markkanen, and Carter?
Yes.
Oh, it's got to be Carter.
For the most return? Even more than Lauri.
I think so. I mean, he has one more year under his rookie scale contract, and those are really valuable. I mean, I don't think LaVine has very much trade value just because he's properly paid. He's making a lot of money. And Carter, yeah. He's, what is he making? Like, I don't know, $5 million or something, like whatever the seventh pick gets.
Yep.
And Lowry, you know, I love Lowry. We've talked about it before on your podcast, but Carter, I think the fact that he has this two-way potential, whereas Lowry, I think he's probably going to cap out as like an average defender. I think that would make teams want Carter a lot more, and there's so much more stuff that Carter can do that he's just not being allowed to. I mean, even in this last game against the Lakers, Tyson Chandler was standing like 15 feet away from him on the three-point line. He did take one corner three, which was nice to see. He missed it. The Bulls, they, you know, Fred Hoiberg was the shooting coach and the head coach back when he was there. I don't think they've replaced that role. So you've seen the three-point shooting decline so much. Everybody on this team is scared of taking a three. I would love to see somebody working with Carter to get that shot going. And the passing, too. He's started throwing some better passes. He had a great one to Chandler Hutchinson for a dunk in that Lakers game, too. But They're not really using him in that facet either. I mean, what they're doing with him is so ridiculous. They just throw it to him in the post. He was trying to post up Rudy Gobert against the Jazz in that game you were watching. It's like, why are you doing that? Like, he's not going to be able to succeed against Defensive Player of the Year. Like, use this guy for his versatility. That's why you drafted him. It just makes no sense.
I agree 100%. You saw him against in Portland. Nurkic was on him. And, you know, that's the one thing that he could probably do half decently is Nurkic on the defensive end is post-defense. Why aren't you bringing him out? You know, that's where Carter Jr. can hit the shot and pull him away from the basket. They're trying to post him up. It's like, what is wrong with these guys? And I agree 100% too. Like in the game yesterday against the Lakers, he's doing handoffs 18 feet from the basket and there's nobody within 5 feet of him. Turn around, face the basket, and knock down the shot to bring the guy out.
I completely agree with you. Yeah, it's so frustrating to watch.
It is. 100%. And I don't care if he's shooting 20%. Pull him out beyond the three-point line. He has that range, and let him shoot. And if we lose, who cares? But isn't that a better use of every possession than ending it with a Robin Lopez hook shot in the post? It's like, what the hell is wrong with these people? I don't care if we lose every game. Another point, I hope you agree with me on this, and this happened, I think this was in the Portland game. He's got three fouls. He picks up his third foul at the end of the second quarter. And immediately he was playing like for 20 seconds and he picked up his third foul and immediately pulls him out. And I'm like, dude, keep him in there. I don't care if he fouls out of every game for the remainder of the season. How does the game end? He plays 17 minutes with four fouls. How stupid is that? You know, it's like, I don't understand what these guys are thinking sometimes as coaching this team. It does us no good to develop these guys that aren't going to be here. And Shaq Harrison, I like the kid. He's a nice kid. He shouldn't be anywhere near a top 10, rotation player. He's 11 through 15. Same with, Archie, not in the NBA.
You can see, too, that Carter's starting to get really frustrated by his role on this team. I mean, he's constantly complaining to the officials. He got a technical the other day for doing that, and he'd never picked up a technical in the beginning of the season. He's, like, a very mild-mannered guy, actually, if you talk to him. So I think that he's getting really annoyed with his role here. The time that Boylan sat him for introspection, that was totally ridiculous. I mean, I went back and watched that game too, and he was playing fine. He definitely was not the reason why the Bulls were getting killed in that game.
Agree,
so stuff like that where he's averaging like 20-something, I think he's averaging like 22 minutes a game under Boylan, it's just so crazy. I mean, the whole point of the season is to develop him and Markkanen, so Boylan's got to play him.
Agreed. And I hope somebody with senses eventually comes down and does that and says so. And not only that, I don't know if you agree with this, but the delta between when he's on the court and off the court as far as rim protection is like a Grand Canyon. Like last night, you saw it immediately. As soon as he leaves the court, the Bulls have zero rim protection when Bobby Portis is playing the five. Or Lowry. You know, they're just not rim protectors. He is so good on that end at protecting the basket. And he's been a victim of a ton of horrible officiating this year that I think will lessen as he gets older and you know, more years in the league. And it's just insanity that they keep on pulling him off the court just because he's in foul trouble. Like I said, who cares if he fouls out? I want to get your take, though. First of all, thank you so much for your time. Just a few more quick questions for you on the backup point guard position. Are you a believer in Ryan and Shaq Harrison, or do you feel that's an area we need to upgrade, assuming Dunn's even the starter next year? Because I'm in the latter on that. I think we need to upgrade that position badly.
Yeah, I think I've heard you say this where you think that the Bulls 6 through 10 guys should be more like 11 through 15 guys, and I am definitely in agreement with that. I think Arch Diakono, he has a nice role as a third point guard. Yes. Seems like a really good practice player too, and just a good guy to have on your team. But he can't be the primary backup on a playoff team. I don't think that's ever going to happen. It's the same thing with Shaq Harrison. Like, he brings some really nice things to the game. I think he's definitely worth keeping around. But, I mean, when you know, when you're a cast off of the Suns, who have probably an even worse point guard rotation than the Bulls, when you couldn't even make that squad, like, that tells you that you're probably not going to be, like, one of the 31st best point guards in the league. It's just not realistic.
Agreed. Do you feel, number one, free agency, bringing in talent next year, what position do we need to get?
Oh, you said it, like, point guard, somebody to challenge Dunn for the starting role or be a very high level backup. And then also they, of course, I mean, badly need a wing. Anybody can see that.
That's three. So who are, I mean, keep in mind, one thing we do forget is Denzel missed the entire year. He'll be back next year. And I think he would really help the season. I don't know if you're on Denzel Island with me. Probably not. Very few people are, but, is any names come to mind, free agents for next year? So, like, I always go to Patrick Beverley, who I love, is a guy you could bring in who's a vet, could either back up Dunn or even start for him, and can hit threes at a 38% rate. I just love the guy. Anybody at the three, like, I throw out, like, Wes Matthews. What do you think of Wes Matthews? I know he's older, but just like a 1 or 2 year deal that kind of, you know, I think he's having a really nice year for Dallas. Is there anybody else that you have looked at in the free agency market that's not, you know, Durant, but maybe another level down that you would like to see come in?
Yeah, I would aim for guys a little bit younger coming off. You want to probably sign guys to their second contract rather than Matthews. I think this would be like his fourth contract or something. So one guy who I've spent a lot of time talking about on Twitter is Jeremy Lamb. Yes. I think that he'd be a really reasonably priced piece. Nice two-way player, doesn't... You know, he's not a superstar by any means. He's not even close to an all-star, but he's just really solid. That's the guy. That's the type of guy that the Bulls should be targeting.
Good. Oh, Steph, I can't thank you enough for jumping on the Bullseye. Last question. Do you foresee, assuming they get, let's say they sign like a Jeremy Lamb and kind of shore up with just an average guy at the three position, I think we both agree they're going to strike out in every free agent. They add a top, let's say it's not Zion, but let's say it's a guy, you know, a draft pick that's talented player, whoever that may be. Can you see this team making the playoffs next year?
I think so much of it depends on the coaching again. I haven't looked at the Eastern Conference standings recently, but I believe that there's only five teams maybe that are above 500, five or six teams. So I don't really think it takes that much to make the playoffs in the East. If they want to go all out and try to get an 8 seed, they probably could. Is that the right way forward? I mean, I'm not really sure. Like, this upcoming draft is really bad outside of Zion. The 2020 draft is also supposed to be, I think, like, kind of crappy, so maybe there's not as much incentive to tank there. So, yeah, I mean, I think they could if they, you know, play their cards right.
You're in New Orleans with the whole situation with Davis. Are you sensing he's gone?
It would certainly seem that way. The Pelicans, they're owned by same family that owns the Saints, and they're all about the Saints. They don't really care about the Pelicans. Even ownership has come out and said, like, you know, if he wants to leave, then it's not really much we can do about it. So he said that money is not going to be the priority for him. Pelicans, that's the only thing they have going for him in these negotiations. So it seems like he's hinting that he's probably going to leave here.
And I think the Bulls would have the best package, even better than what Boston has. So I'm going to throw out just a few options to close this up for you. Lauri Markkanen and let's say Chris Dunn for Davis. Would you do that?
You know, Fred, even if you did that, you would need Davis to re-sign here, right? And I just don't think it's realistic that he's going to want to come to a team that has very little talent around him where, you know, that's why he was leaving New Orleans.
If he gives you that confirmation, though, hey, I'd be willing to re-sign in Chicago, I guess that's what I'm getting at. How much talent would you be willing to give up? Would you be willing to give up the number one pick this year and Markkanen?
Absolutely. I mean, I would give up everything on the roster for sure, and picks. I mean, he's a top five player in the league. You can't find those guys ever. So anything that the Pelicans want, they could just have.
So I threw out this poll on Twitter: Wendell Carter Jr., Lauri Markkanen, and the number one pick for Anthony Davis, and it got shot down. 33% said yes, 67% said, you know, it was too much.
Well, I mean, I think that's crazy. But,
you know, what happens if it's Zion? What happens if they get the Zion pick?
Yeah, I mean, I would, of course, 100% trade Zion for Anthony Davis. The whole point of the draft is to find a player that can be a top five player. So if you already have that, then there's no point in taking a shot. I mean, people think that Zion is for sure going to be this like stud, the next LeBron James. That happens every single draft. There's only five players in the top five. You already have one. So, you know, take that. Take the sure thing.
Steph, you're the best, man. I can't thank you enough for jumping on Chicago Bullseye. All the best to you out in New Orleans. Anything else you want to plug for coming up? Your articles are fantastic on The Athletic. What are you working on? Anything that we should be aware of?
Nothing in the works right now. I'm trying really hard. You know I was pretty pessimistic on this podcast, but I'm trying really hard to find things optimistic to write about to give the fans some relief from this team. So if anyone has any ideas they want to pitch to me, they can always shoot me tweets on Twitter. You can follow me at Steph Noh on there, Stephnoh. And I did have something on Markkanen and how he's been struggling under Boylan that came out yesterday. So if you have not read that, then please go check that out.
I got a suggestion. How about a long, lengthy article on the impact of Denzel Valentine's absence, his rehab, and his eventual most improved player award for next year? What do you think? That'll add this subscription base, I think, right? Or am I missing out there?
I mean, you're already a subscriber, Fred, and that's kind of targeting an audience of one, so I think I might have to pass on that.
You're the best, Steph. Thanks a lot for jumping on, my man.
Anytime, man.
We'll talk again soon. All right, brother. Bye-bye.